This brings reinforcements.
It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Yay! I'm very excited. You know why I'm particularly excited? Because I'm going on vacation. That's right. I'm getting out of town for a whole week by myself. My favorite thing to do. Because when you really give a shit about other people and what's going on in your life, you have to isolate for a while. So when next time we talk, I'm going to be like totally recharged. Also, you know what else I can't handle? I can't handle it because I see all these on Facebook and everything. Everybody else is on vacation, and I have the worst vacation jealousy. I also have the worst travel jealousy. People go places. So I just, I'm going to feel – I'm doing this to make myself feel good about myself. I'll try anything, really, seriously. So I'm very excited about my guest today. I am so excited. I can't believe he's actually on the show. It's Ben Kronberg. Did I say your name right, Ben? He's smiling at me.
You said it great. It was perfect.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I accept multiple pronunciations, but Kronberg is the general standard.
Oh, that's good.
Kronberg is
Kronberg.
Also okay. I don't have like a no, it's Kronberg. I'm a Pisces, so I can go with the flow.
Well, that explains it. See, we're off to a good start. I mean, this is going to be really interesting because I hardly know Ben. I know Ben's work. I've seen him perform several times. I think he's awesome. I think he's really smart. But I don't really know Ben personally. But since I'm in the role of being his psychotherapist today, we're going to like find out, what Ben's history, personal history is like, and what his growing up experience has been, and how maybe we'll find out how it led to him being such a good comedian. And Ben, do you like that when I say that you're a good comedian, or how does that make you feel? Is there like part of you that just goes, ugh? She doesn't know.
Yeah, you have no idea. No, that's very nice. I absorb. I have a good absorption.
You're good for that.
Of
you're good with
yeah,
that.
I'm
that's
fine
good.
With that.
Ben's a little bit. That. You know what, Ben? I'm going to say this. You're a little bit of a poker face to me. Not that that's any kind of indication of anything about you. It's just that, like, I'm really excited about doing this interview with you because, you know, you're to me the casual observer. You present in an opaque way. Does that make sense to you? Is that something you've heard before?
I suppose, like, yeah, if you're just seeing me at shows and maybe in a particular context, not having, you know, hung out behind the scenes, perhaps, you know, like, I'm sure the picture that I paint for people, like friends and things, is different than maybe,
right.
You know.
Right.
What I'm doing at the shows and the mics and whatnot.
Right. Well, we'll find out. So let's read off some of your credits. First of all, you have a web series coming out. The Bindle Brothers.
The Bindle Brothers.
At bindlebrothers.com. Go. What's it about? Just quick.
It's about a couple guys who are trust fund guys who decide to start a Bindle company in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and so it's kind of like it's a real business, but it's also a web series documenting our efforts in selling these bindles in a kind of modern age where the bindle has sort of been forgotten, but we're trying to bring it back.
And you will learn what a bindle is.
Yeah,
if
you don't know, I mean, you know, a lot of I think everybody knows what a bindle is. Don't know what a bindle is. A bindle is a stick with a handkerchief sack tied to it. So it's what hobos would use. So it's a bindle.
Oh, that's great. Because, yeah.
So
you know, I've
know
often thought, I wish I had one of those sticks with, like, a sack. When I was a little girl, I really wanted one and tried to run, you know, so then I could run away from home, get away from those horrible people.
Yeah.
So, Ben, you have, like, these are great credits. Look at this. Half Hour, Comedy Central. You were on Last Comic Standing. We know all about. I saw that.
I saw that. Okay.
Yeah. Are you sick of talking about that?
I'm not the. Yeah.
Yeah. You're over it. You were on Jimmy Kimmel. You have an amazing set. This is just such a great set on Seth Meyers. You guys should really like Google this stuff. Google this Seth Meyers late night thing.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, Ben, part of what I particularly like about your kind of comedy is that it's very conceptual. And that's why I am probably, you know, that's one of the things about comedy that particularly turns me on. Because the work I do on my own is, I always say that, you know, a really good comedian is probably, you know, the ultimate, in a certain way, ultimate conceptual artist. I mean, it's very close to what visual artists or people that call themselves quote unquote fine artists are doing, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think there's definitely, there was like a Facebook, Twitter discussion a while back where somebody wanted to deny comedians that are artists. Like, we're not artists. We're just, you know,
yeah, I think
we just tell jokes. And it was like from a pretty, you know, pretty well-known good comedian who was saying that. And,
yeah.
And it was like an interesting discussion because he kind of wanted to disavow any sort of art involvement in comedy. But I try to be mindful of
yeah, I mean, I think your work certainly. I mean, Stephen Wright is like to me the ultimate. I actually have a fantasy of someday making his work. I have an idea for. I want to make all his work into an art project, but that's a whole other story. So the thing is, though, but you know, like the thing is, there's a lot of you know, like there's. I mean, I didn't really learn about comedy until maybe like 5 years ago or more, maybe a little more. You know, 2006.
Like that, you could do it.
Well,
sort
it's
of thing, or
no, that it was really smart because my idea of comedy was just, and I mean, I consider myself, you know, a cultured person. You know, I was taken to art museums. We lived in Manhattan as a little girl, stuff like that. And I always thought comedy was just really idiotic and a bunch of teenage boys and, you know, fart penis jokes. But then I realized, like, these people are fucking smart. Right?
Yeah, I definitely think it's like, I mean, I think everybody is smart and has like a, you know, something that they're smart in. I think what happens with comedians is they get the opportunity to express their intelligence and it's sort of like what they've taken on is sort of like, okay, they have to put their intelligence to use. Whereas a lot of people, I think, doing whatever job they're doing or whatever industry they're in, they might not be tapping into that, their own personal intelligence that would, you know, even make people say, oh, you're smart, you know? Like,
well, I think a job that you're getting paid for has nothing, I mean, I don't consider that necessarily has anything to do with one's potential intelligence. I consider, like, comedy in the world of, like, an art or some kind of personal pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least starts out that way. You can make a shitload of cash, yes, and, you know, there's a point where you won't do it if you don't get paid. I get that. But, I mean, to start out, to get involved in it. It's a personal pursuit. But, you know, I was going to ask you about, I wanted to ask you, and then we'll get right into, you know, your upbringing. But, you know, like, for example, I wanted to ask you, you know, what do you think of Jackie Mason as a comedian? I'll just tell you quickly. I went, like, my idea of comedy, and this was, like, not that long ago, when I was single, a guy took me on a date. I didn't know anything about comedy. A guy took me on a date to see Jackie Mason. And I think he bought tickets because I'm a Jew and Jackie's a Jew. And it was horrible. I'm sorry. I thought it was horrible. I hated the date. I felt really like I felt like I was sitting there and I was having to laugh. And it was just like, and that kind of cemented my idea about comedy until much more recently. But what do you think of Jackie Mason? Do you understand why I felt that way?
You know, I don't necessarily have a strong opinion about Jackie Mason. I mean, I remember seeing him in I think it was Caddyshack 2. He was the dad, the like this rich guy in Caddyshack 2. And I thought he was funny and had a thing. But I wouldn't. You know, I'm not like that familiar with like, that's a Jackie Mason joke, you know.
He's not even so, I mean.
But I think he's a part of the lexicon of comedy and getting it, you know, perpetuating it, keeping it moving forward, I think.
But if you were me and you didn't know anything about comedy and then somebody took you to see that, you'd be like, what the fuck? That's horrible. I mean, if you had to sit there for like an hour and a half on a date, you would not be happy.
Yeah.
Where you were having to laugh and look like you were having fun. No, not a good idea. Well, come on. Anyway. But I did see George Carlin in the 70s, which was because my boyfriend in high school, see, this is all about me. My boyfriend in high school took, this was great because it was like the only time this ever happened. His father took us on a double date with his father's date. And it was like hilarious because we went to see George Carlin on it like a double date with this date of his father's who was, it was so awkward for her. I felt terrible. She didn't know us. Me and, you know, I was close with my boyfriend, the family, the father, and this poor woman, she didn't know us and she was on a fucking date. I mean, dating, those are two date stories. Dating in certain circumstances is more awkward than this conversation where I'm about to ask you everything about your childhood when I don't even know you, right?
Yeah.
It can be really awkward.
Yeah, that's okay, fine. No, so awkward is okay.
Yeah, I'm okay, I live for the awkward. Okay, so let's talk about, like, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Denver, Colorado, mainly in the suburbs. I was born in Denver, but then just sort of, like, homogenized in the suburbs and surrounded with that sort of vibe. Like, my parents got divorced when I was in the fourth grade, and then so I moved, you know, moved a lot of times around, but just the kind of the same area.
Like a suburb. What did your parents do?
Well, you know, before my parents got divorced, my mom was the stay-at-home mom, and my dad, like, bought and sold and repaired medical equipment. It was sort of like the vocation that he had fallen into once he started having kids, and, you know, once my parents got pregnant with my sister, who's the oldest.
How many kids?
Three.
And
three total. I'm the youngest.
The youngest. Yeah. And are they boys or girls, the other ones?
One's a girl. One's a girl. And the middle child is my brother. Mm-hmm. And so there's two boys and
two boys and a girl.
And one gal.
And so your father, is that a job that you, was that like his own business or do you go to a office?
He had like, what do you call that, apprenticed with somebody who did that stuff and like fixing autoclaves and centrifuges and all the medical equipment that you would use to like sterilize or separate blood or all the things. That
so we, did he we, separate we, your blood at
he
home?
He never separated. He never separated my blood, but we, you know, so I. But he ran the business out of our home. So
okay.
The garage, and
work
the basement.
Work at home, Dad.
Yeah, the garage.
Work at
and the
home.
Basement
he was around.
Were, yeah.
So, what did your mom do after the divorce? Like, what happened there?
She went. Her first job was at a grocery store, and I remember she wasn't there very long because she was doing something with the salad bar that they had there. And one of the other workers like had a Band-Aid that they were wearing a Band-Aid, and the Band-Aid basically got discarded by accident in this salad bar. And she was just
Jesus.
Like, she couldn't take it. So then she went to, go work for lawyers. She started like, you know, kind of as like a, you know, out of the gate, fresh out of the womb paralegal. And, worked for a law office for a while, and then that kind of one of the lawyers became a judge, and he brought her along to become a clerk, and then she's been in that whole system and working for the state and all that sort of stuff. So she's
So how did the divorce go? Like, what was that? Were your parents not getting along? Like, what was that like? That must have been really tough.
I mean, I remember my parents fighting. One of the vivid memories of my parents is of them fighting and them being like in their room and other things, and there's sort of being those tensions, you know, because I was in fourth grade, so I was still pretty young, you know, when it happened.
Yeah,
but I do remember listening, you know, to them fighting and then asking my brother, like, are they going to get a divorce? Are they going to get a divorce? Because I had seen that. You know, I did see that one movie, Irreconcilable Differences, which was sort of like it planted the seed of like, oh, this is, you know.
This could happen to you.
Yeah, this could happen. And, you know, I pretty much, you know, it seemed like the gap between them telling me on their bed that Santa wasn't real and then them taking us out on the deck and telling us kids that they were going to be separated, right? Because you get separated before you get divorced, right? Because we're going to see how it goes when dad lives somewhere else and all these sorts of things. Then the day that they told us they were getting separated, we went as a family to see Big Trouble in Little China. And that's sort of been my favorite movie ever since, because it was the true escape that I needed, you know. It was like, all right, I don't want to, you know, too much for a little brain to be thinking about the future of everything. And I just wanted to be immersed in fantasy worlds, you know. I just wanted to play with toys and not worry about whatever my parents were doing.
Well, that's really good parenting then, because what they did was they actually really, you know, found a way to chill everybody out, which is actually to their credit, I would say, right?
Yeah. We didn't we didn't go for the, you know, hey, we're getting separated and now let's go to dinner and not talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it was like just something to do. And I kind of wonder how they view that movie, like if they think it's you know, if they remember that part of it at all.
Have you ever asked them or thought of asking them?
I haven't really. I mean, there's other, you know, now that we're a number of years away from that particular moment, I'm 38 years old right now, so it's sort of like this, you know, a big distance between then and now. And so it's things I think
it's
about
awkward to bring up, you know. Mom, listen, maybe she's listening.
Yeah, maybe. She's probably working right now. She's a hard worker.
That sounds like you have a lot of respect for her.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I get right there. That's good. Respect for women. Yay.
I respect women.
And your older sister. Yeah, respect for women. What does your older sister do?
My sister, she does a couple of things. She's an interpreter for the deaf and hearing impaired.
Wow.
And she also, you know, kind of did... Excuse me. Pardon me. Excuse me. Oh man,
nothing like
listening to somebody cough on the air, huh?
Hey,
at least you're not going to catch whatever I catch because you're just listening. You don't have to.
These listeners,
you don't
are
have
tough.
To. You don't
They're
have to.
Tough.
Yeah, you guys got good immune systems, right?
Yeah.
And she also does massage therapy. So
nice.
She's like very hand based profession.
A lot of very direct stuff, kind of intuitive, sort of in her body, maybe a little.
She's very holistic.
She's
very into that sort of stuff. She also does, I think she went to school for a while for art therapy at Naropa, kind of post sign language and post, you know, just kind of always exploring. And, you know, so she also does sell her art and things like that. And she does kind of like folk art, like found objects and modifying them with different messages and
bring her down here next Bushwick Open Studios.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
It would be great. Like, yeah, she lives in Colorado.
Yeah,
and
tell her to send her work down. We'll show it right here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Show it on the radio.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a physical space.
Yeah, it
we'll
is.
Invite everybody. Look at me. I'm like, yeah. So, I'm turning the studio into a gallery. So, what about your brother? What does he do?
My brother. He went to school to be an engineer, and so now he is sort of like in the management position at a manufacturing company that does stuff with kind of similar field as what my dad did. But he, you know, manufacture parts, disposable parts for blood reoxygenating machines.
So
instead of getting a blood transfusion, you actually have your blood taken out of you, separated, and then put back together, and then put in you. So you're only using your blood during surgery.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he
your family's good with blood.
They're good with blood.
Kind of like vampires.
Yeah, it's all.
Oh, Jesus, that's not funny. See, talking about all that stuff probably is making me nervous. Like, I'm going to, like, I don't know, you know, medical shit. It's medical shit.
It's medical stuff.
So what happened when your parents got divorced? Did you see your dad on the weekends? Did your dad live nearby? Did your parents argue? How was that? Your mom get a new boyfriend? What happened there?
There was some, you know, I mean, there was the natural mode of bitterness that I think happened. And, you know, perhaps some early on abandonment issues being developed. But, yeah, I would see my dad on the weekend. So, and then I actually started to have a better relationship with my dad after my parents got divorced because it was actually a specific time, as opposed to just taking for granted the proximity of my father and occasionally being around him or sitting down on the couch with him. We actually had, you know, that sort of visitation sort of
focused time.
Yeah, focused time. And so, like, going to movies with my dad, Jean-Claude Van Damme movies in the mall, and eating pizza and arcade. And, you know, I would go for walks with my dad and things like that. And so that was like a thing that I had never experienced before.
Oh, nice.
And it seemed like the divorce humbled him a bit as far as making him I think he became more sensitive, a more sensitive individual. Mm-hmm. And I think he also felt free because, you know, getting married early on, getting married because you got, you know, having the shotgun wedding sort of thing.
Oh, man.
That, I think that sort of, you know, they were 19. Man.
They were 19?
They were like 18 and 19 years old.
Man.
And so he didn't have, you know, really that much time
gotta
to sow his oats.
Those rubbers.
Nor my
condoms,
yeah.
Man. Rubbers, that's my condoms.
Condoms.
Did you have a talk with your dad about, you know, birth control?
Oh, that he, yeah.
Yeah, somebody should have.
Right.
No, I hear you. I hear you. So yeah, that all makes sense. What happened after 9? What happened after that? That must have been, that's like obviously a major factor in your development, right?
Yeah, it sort of revealed, you know, this potential truth about life that I'd otherwise been sheltered from. And I think it made, it created the mode of introspection for me more than had my parents stayed together, maybe.
Oh,
you know,
that's
like thinking about things and relationships, and I mean, to this day, I'm still sort of averse to the idea of marriage, anyways, because what I kind of really observe from people that are married or getting married, and all the reasons that people get married, and all the focus on the
stupid wedding,
the stupid wedding, and the fun reception, and all these things. And I went to film school. I was a videographer for a while, so you know I did a couple wedding videos for people. And one of like the coolest wedding video that I ever did for somebody, I filmed on Super 8 millimeter and did all this cool stuff. And that couple ended up like not being married for like over a year or two.
That's another disappointment.
So it was a beautiful wedding, but
that's
it was
why
like,
your Tumblr is so good. I get it. Yeah. Now I'm getting it. So, okay. So what happened? Where did you, like, how was high school? Where'd you go to college? That kind of thing.
I went to University of Colorado, Boulder, because that's where my brother went. And I sort of had to copy my brother. He'd get his ears pierced. I'd get my ears pierced. Mm. He started skateboarding. I would skateboard. So then him going there was sort of like the draw, plus it was an in-state school, and I didn't have any outside pressure to go to any whatever school. You know, I wasn't like, well, you need to get into an Ivy League. There, I didn't have any of that pressure. It was like, but there was definitely the general college pressure, like you should go to college because it's a good thing to do and whatever. And I, you know, to this day, I still haven't paid back a single student loan. I've been
saying that on my show.
But you know, but I went to school, okay. And it was a really good. You know, it was a good experience, but it was also like, oh, now I'm, you know, that was my initiation into the world of debt, which, you know, it taught me debt more than it did how to become a, you know, a functional part of society.
Thing.
Like, I can have conversations about everything because of my liberal arts degree, but including, like, you know, why I haven't paid back my student loans.
So, like, in high school, I mean, you're obviously a creative person. Where you did, and it sounds like you weren't really sure, you weren't, like, driven to be, like, I'm going to be a writer, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. Like, so were you, like, when you were, like, in high school, did you have a creative bent that you were exploring? How were the girls? Did you have a lot of friends, a lot of girlfriends?
I had one girlfriend, really. I had a couple girlfriends, but one major girlfriend from like junior year of high school to junior year of college. And, you know, that was a formative experience for a couple reasons. One, it just sort of introduced me to being in a relationship and quite a long relationship. Like, I've known people that are my age that still haven't been in a relationship for 4 years, which I was like from high school to college. And, you know, also coming out of that, at the end of our relationship, I found out that she had cheated on me for 2 years of our 4-year relationship.
Oh man, that's such a bad. That must have really affected you. That's bad.
Yeah, that did affect
that's
me.
That's really
for sure.
Fucked up.
It was very fucked up.
Oh man, you know, betrayal like that kind of betrayal is really. I think it's really hard. I think it's from what I see, it really affects people in a way that's even hard to really put your finger on. It's hard for me to exactly understand it. It's like one of those things like having a divorce, which I haven't had. It's kind of in that category. It can be, I mean, I know it's your high school girlfriend and all, but I think it can be a big influential experience.
Yeah, it's funny. And like she was a Gemini in this little console here right in front of me. The name brand of it is Gemini. That's an interesting
you're making a connection.
I'm making connections. That's the problem with, you know, any sort of trauma. Then you make all these connections. Like she had cheated on me with the guy who she initially broke up with to go out with me. And so she kind of like was secretly in a relationship with him. But then when I found this out, because basically he would drive around while we were on dates. He would follow us. I had no idea, but she knew that he was following us, but she didn't want to let me know because he would threaten like, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. I'm going to spill your beans. And so she was always had this, like, it was this unexplainable tension to me that I didn't know why she was feeling distant or acting weird. But it was because she was, you know, kind of in this double life. And when I found out that this guy drove a red Jeep Cherokee, once I found all this information out, every single car on the road that I would see driving around in, you know, the suburbs of North Denver was like, oh, another Jeep Cherokee. And it would just like trigger this like thing for me, like, oh, is that him? And like, you know, my heart would get all. That was kind of around the time I also experienced like my first panic attacks. That was when I started having panic attacks. Is I think when all of this stuff was going down, like the time leading up to finding out she was cheating on me, to actually, you know, after.
You had a sense that it was not quite right.
Yeah, there was a sense, and but yet. When you've committed to somebody and have told them you love them, that love can definitely, you know, put the blinders on
and sex,
you know. And it was that thing that I, you know, it was an intense thing that I, you know, but it also that whole experience that became a joke, one of the first jokes that I ever said on stage and that I eventually got to say on TV, was that joke. I did a joke about the breakup, which is my ex-girlfriend wore one of those "What Would Jesus Do" bracelets. Apparently Jesus would cheat on his boyfriend for 2 years of their 4-year relationship and keep it a secret from God and everybody. Thanks, Jesus. So that, you know, that kind of came out of this trauma of like, and I think that's just like typical with comedians that, you know, they deal with the things in their mind. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes they're waxing political, but other times it's very personal and, you know.
Right. And in a way that you, where the audience, there's some distance in there.
Yep.
And it's, I could totally see how that would work. So when did you get into comedy? How'd you get into comedy?
I got into comedy through music. My last semester of college, my mom had bought me a guitar because I'd always had to play the piano growing up, but I wasn't into the piano. I always wanted to play the guitar because my buddy Jason had a guitar, and I was like, I want to play the guitar, you know? And so I got this guitar and would, you know, picking it up at an older age, I wasn't very good, but I was able to sing, and because I was in choir in like junior high and stuff, I was able to sing and play at the same time. And so the songs that I ended up playing or making up kind of tended to be sillier songs. And I, you know, at one point I decided to do the open mic at this bar that I was working at in Denver. And, you know, sort of like making that decision and having somebody see me at that show and be like, hey, you should try that song at the comedy club. They have a new talent night.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
that put me in that context. And then I just sort of, I just sort of went with the flow, followed the sort of divining rod or the muse of like, you
One
know, where is my,
another,
yeah,
and,
yeah. And this was after college. And
you had studied filmmaking
in studied
college.
Filmmaking.
So that's not unrelated either.
Yeah. There's, you know, it's just sort of like following whatever I'm interested in and not wanting to also make a decision on what I do or what I'm doing. But then when I went the direction of comedy, I didn't even have to decide. I didn't like, you know, consciously decide like I want to be a comedian or
right,
I'm a
you,
comedian.
Yeah.
I was just doing comedy.
You're doing what you were doing.
And then just keep doing it and doing it
right.
and doing it. And
you were good at it and you developed. I mean, that's ideally, if you can get in touch with what you're good at, that's and then keep doing it, that would ideal. And I, you know, it sounds like you figured that out.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but there's also plenty of hilarious people and funny people out there that have flirted with the idea of comedy, but they have whatever block that keeps them from trying it even the first time. And anybody that asks me for comedy advice, I say just, you know, don't overthink it and get that first time out of the way, because that first time will tell you whether you're going to do it again or not. Like, otherwise, you'll just be in perpetual, you know, theory mode of like, well, if I did this, it might be this way, but you just have to do it to see. You know, you have to get on the thing and let it buck you off, or let the fact that it buck you off make you want to get back on the, you know,
right,
the
right.
horse again, or be like, nope, I don't want to get on that again.
If you're really going to do comedy, I don't think you can be ambivalent about it if you're going to really do it, right? There's a lot of obstacles. I mean, the open mic thing is really like painful, right?
Yeah.
Does that like you have to really go through a lot of that?
I mean, I still go to open mics,
right,
because I want to stay connected with that part of appreciating, you know, figuring out jokes, and not like I've figured out, you know, I don't want to approach this thing like I've figured it out, because I really
right.
haven't figured it out, if you know.
Right, hopefully.
Even
yeah, who
I mean
wants
I, I've
to?
Figured parts of it out, and I've
right.
found opportunities, and I've, you know, made money doing it, but
you got to develop.
By
I mean,
no
if
means
you're not developing
I,
a creative skill, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So, but I mean, it seems like, yeah, comedy seems like something that you have to really, I mean, because you have to do it all the time. You have to do it. Like, I mean, you can't really get good at it unless you're out there all the time, right?
Yeah, it helps. It's the thing that, you know, when I first started performing and dabbling with comedy, I was like, I want to do this once a week, and then that became like, I just want to do this as much as I can.
Yeah.
And because you also need to, because it's like, oh, I have to wait a week to try these jokes again to
yeah.
see if they can maybe work better. It's like the learning curve. That's why New York is so great, and other places with bigger scenes are now luckily so many cities, major and secondary, have comedy scenes, and they're creating their own opportunities for getting on stage, and we're not at the mercy of just the comedy club giving us the stage
right,
time. Like
right.
I mean, I work a couple clubs in the city, but I don't really have to focus on any clubs or any of their mics because of how robust the scene is here.
Sure.
Like there's so like the, have you seen that list of open mics, Bad Slava?
I haven't looked at it.
Well, it's a great list
yeah.
that I use wherever I'm at and even here to remind me of like what's going on, and it's like a nationwide list of all the open mics that are happening every single night, and with contacts and everything like that. And it's this really great invaluable service that people that are coming to New York are like, hey, what shows should I hit up? And I definitely have ones that I can try to help them get on or whatever, but I try to point them in that direction, because there's all the comedians that are in the scene are pretty much hitting up some open mic.
Yeah. That makes sense. I'm going to do the station ID because it's time for that. So anyway, hi everybody. It's Dr. Lisa and we're here at Radio Free Brooklyn. It's the most popular station in the tri-state area. I'm here talking with comedian Ben Kronberg today, and we are sponsored by Paul Mitchell Hair Care. So today I want to promote their leave-in conditioner, which is really great because you don't have to wash it out, and if you're lazy, it's perfect. You just wash your hair and then just stick it on there, and you're good to go. So, yeah. Anyway, so what happened after? How'd you get to New York?
I had to go to L.A. before I found New York and the experience, the magic that is New York. I went to L.A. because I had, via a comedy festival that I got into, had picked up some representation and got connected with the Jimmy Kimmel people, and they sort of, my manager was like urging me to move to L.A., and I did that for a couple years and had some opportunities and auditions and submitted writing things to write and stuff, and started like selling some jokes to people and doing, you know, just sort of
comedy.
All the odd things. Yeah. And doing comedy.
Comedy brought you to L.A.
Comedy brought me to L.A. And then, you know, a girl had moved from Denver to live with me in Los Angeles. And then we tried to make that work for 6 months or so. And, it didn't work. And then I was in between places, and I started performing at colleges because I, you know, College Agent was pretty much the first performance oriented agent that I got. And so I started traveling around performing at colleges and
fell in love with New York.
In my travels, went to New York just to visit a friend who I had known since the sixth grade, who, was living here doing hair. And,
oh, neat.
And then, you know, I was like, I should just move here because I had never done comedy in New York. And once I did my first show, I was like, oh, man, this is great. Like, way more supportive and exhilarating than performing in Los Angeles. And I could take the train around, and I could stay up late, and all these, you know, all
so
these
many
things.
Places.
There's like, it's
sure.
It was so fun.
So
and
many
so,
comedians, so many places.
So I just relocated because I didn't have any ties in Los Angeles. I, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did that, and I've been here for, you know, about 7+ years.
Wow.
Which is like time is, I'm like, what have I done? Have I done anything? What has happened?
According
you
to
know?
This list I have here that I haven't finished reading, you've done quite a bit. But I know how, look, you know.
Once you've done the thing and it's done, it's like, all right, what's next? And when you start feeling that what's next feeling, it's sort of the, it's a mixed bag of like, okay, I've done some stuff, but then when you try to use that stuff to move you forward, you realize that there's all these other people that have that stuff too, that we're all competing for the same thing, and you really have to focus on making your own opportunities and doing your own.
The art world's the same way. Yeah, I mean, any creative field, I think the higher up you get, the steeper it is, and then the steeper it is, you get to a point where you're at a certain level where everybody's just really good.
Yeah.
So can I ask some more direct questions about girls?
Okay.
And you don't have to answer them because I'm aggressive about asking them, but I'm not pushy about getting the answers.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
I think that's fair. So anyway, because, you know, I've been thinking about it while we're talking, and, I was wondering I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot for one, you know, young developing person to go through, see what happened with your parents breaking up and then having that happen to you with your girlfriend at a young age. And did you have a good relationship with your mom?
Yeah, I did. More or less my mom raised me, you know, throughout everything and has always been there for me. And even once I started comedy and started moving around for comedy, she's been very supportive of me and, you know, will like post on Facebook and come to shows and tell people at her work about me and different
things.
She's
really obviously proud of you.
Yeah, it's a really, you know, I feel lucky because I've also known friends that, you know, they'd been doing comedy for as long as me at one point, like 8 or 9 years or something like that, where they, their parents hadn't seen them perform, even though they talked to their parents, but their parents didn't accept or weren't really wanting to accept that. And I have other musician friends that are similar where their parents don't get that they're amazing musicians and write these awesome songs. And because they don't feel like that's a thing, they don't give them the ability to, they don't give them with that little nucleus of confidence. It's like, oh, that's so cool that you're doing this. Go for it. You got to go for it. Cause I wasn't able to do it. You know?
So having support from your family definitely like helps. So did those things affect your your relationship with women and going forward?
I think it made me a little, I think the biology of desiring somebody to be with intimately, always stuck around. I never felt so burned that I was like, I'm not doing this, because I'd always mm-hmm. meet somebody and be like, oh wait, they're actually cool, or I like them, or, mm-hmm. or we have fun together, or blah, blah, blah. But that was the interesting thing about my first long-term girlfriend is she, would laugh at everything that I would say. And that made me feel really good, having somebody laugh at you, not just like...
Mm-hmm. Really get you and laugh at you.
And, you know, so that was a thing that I was like, mm-hmm. Everybody's different. Like, the girl that moved out to L.A. from Denver to live with me, she wasn't that... She didn't give up the laughs that much.
You need a girlfriend that laughs.
I do need a girlfriend that laughs, and that can make a joke, but that isn't necessarily a comedian, because I've also dated, and hung out with comedians, mm-hmm. and it's nice, but then there's that competition level and that underlying thing that's just sort of like, okay, maybe it's this too is too much. too close for comfort.
See, my worry as a self-proclaimed psychotherapist for you would be, and I still, we've been talking 45 minutes. I don't think I'm in any position to really say with any authority, for God's sakes. But my worry for you would be that you would go for women that might repeat that pattern. Like, what I was wondering about is that the woman who was cheating on you, if there was some excitement or distance that was sort of very stimulating for you in a very unconscious way or fairly unconscious way. And I'm worrying about you, Ben. I'm a little worrying about you because I give a shit. So I wonder if that's something that you're drawn to, which could have been spurred a little bit by the divorce, and that you might fall into a pattern like that. Like, what do you think?
I mean,
has that happened to you since, or women that flirt with other guys, or
that particular experience hasn't happened to me since, though I've in multiple years of dating and living with multiple women and experiencing it, I definitely think I've broken that cycle, but I've also had,
I'm not saying you even had a cycle.
Well, no, I could
have
did.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I mean, that particular experience, I think, was fueled as much by, that girl's past, and I had a window into her history and her psychology, even going into that breakup and being cheated on, where I think it wasn't like, why is this happening? I was able to be like, oh, yeah, that thing that happened to you when you were younger could really fuck you up, and this is probably probably the least bad thing that you could be doing with what happened to you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so,
so
I had the window into her behavior that allowed me to separate it from women and what women might be doing.
Very,
very
healthy, resilient, and mature. Good for you. Those are great skills that you must have developed.
Wow.
From having to deal with probably your parents and a lot of other shit.
Yeah, and Santa.
And also, were you a little bit of a weirdo ever? Were you considered a weirdo because you're really smart? Did you fit in?
I tried to fit in with everybody. That was another thing that I learned early on with having to move around, always be at a new school, so I'd always have to learn. It was either be always a loner or just make new friends. And so I think I picked up the skill of being able to make new friends very easily, and
also
friends
really
with everybody.
Good.
Like once I got to high school, I didn't just hang out with my particular circle of friends. I hung out with band people, guys that were in the drum line, but I also had friends that were football mm-hmm. players. I was like a
So you were probably pretty popular.
I was
funny guy popular?
I was popular enough,
the
most popular
guy
in school, but people I could walk around not feeling like I was gonna get beat
good.
up.
Good, good, good.
In junior high, that was different, though. I did have a sort of a bully spit in my face in the locker room just to kind of make his friends laugh. And I just sort of had to suck it up, and, like, there was no recourse that I could take other than the humility of the moment with, you know, some guy's spit running down my face and being like, oh, this sucks.
I never heard anybody say anything decent about middle school. It's the hell yeah. for everybody.
Yeah, it's
so today, let's get to today. So because we only have like another 50 hours on here, and yeah, you know, right. we only have so anyway, so you're in a relationship now?
I am in a relationship
and,
now.
And how long has that been?
I would say a good solid 9 months or so. You know, approaching a year for sure.
Do you live together?
We do live together. It's you know, it's not like we moved in together. I sort of moved in with her and in that way. So we didn't like, here, let's find a place together. It was a little bit more low key, which I also like. I don't like making a big to do about things like future planning. I like to be in the moment, you know, and so this was the moment that felt right. And you know, one of the things that I think I've learned from what I value and what I need in a partner is calmness. I need somebody who their base level is calm, not combative, or
a feeling you've had that.
Not too excitable.
You know,
not too excitable. Like, just, you know, somebody that actually has a, you know, a nice mellow disposition and also going with the flow. I think that helps, and that's
you like easygoing.
I like easygoing.
Naturally and easygoing, not where they have to try.
Easygoing, good sense of humor, and those things are like higher up on the list than other, like, oh, blonde hair or used to just be like a thing.
Oh, really?
Well, no, when you're a kid, but it's like, oh, blondes are girls equal blonde equals girl. Like, it's like, you know.
We definitely believe you were way past that.
I'm beyond that.
So, how long was the relationship you had before that?
It was a couple years. It was over 2 years. It lasted 2 years, yeah. And it was a very intense relationship, and it was a lot of headbutting of you know, the intellectual and social variety and the struggle, you know. And it's sort of like, I think anything, it's sort of like tug of war, and relationships are kind of like tug of war. You don't want there to be nobody at the other end of that rope to where you're just pulling on nothing.
Right.
But when that person is so against you that they're pulling so hard that your arms are coming out of your sockets, that's not good either. You want that sort of even pull of, you know, you both have a chance to win and you're playing the same game sort of vibe. But
right.
I felt like there was too much on the other end of that rope that was like.
So now you have
like,
somebody,
take this.
Somebody who's calm.
Yeah, and so, yeah, not really into conflict. Because some people are very like prone to conflict.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, contrarians or things like that. And those are, you know, I think, you know, those
so
people make fine.
You sound
lawyers.
Like a two-year, three-year relationship type guy? Is that it?
My longest relationship was 7 years.
Oh, that's a really long time.
I, you know, 4 year was my first one. I've done definitely, you know, all those things. Mm-hmm. But I don't, you know, I don't necessarily think about, I try not to think about things in those terms. But
right.
Just
do you want
to
have children?
Just try to
someday?
Go with the flow.
Do you care about that, or you think about that?
I like kids, but I don't necessarily want to have kids because I've seen my friends who have kids, and it's just sort of like, it's cool and it's nice, but it's also very distracting from so many things. And I, you know, at least in my life right now, I want to be able to be mobile and feel
so
not responsible for anything but myself.
So do you feel like your career? I mean, which is obviously takes a huge amount of dedication that you have to it. I mean, obviously, is that like kind of like a big focus for you before all else, as it is for many creative people? Like, would you say, like, that's the thing that, like,
yeah,
you're
like,
feeding the most? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You feed that first, and then everything gets fed after that. So a lot of maybe your comedy, having a comedy career is just even making money as a comedian is a huge deal. You know, I mean, most people could never even approach doing that. So to really make that career happen, it just seems like it would take a lot of dedication. And however that career is going and how you're feeling about it would probably dictate a lot of other things, like where, and because you're in a career that doesn't have like a 9-to-5 job, you know, it doesn't have any kind of stability really.
Yeah, it has the stability of unpredictability.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I would imagine that would also lead to having some less, I hate to use this word committed, but that's the first one that comes to mind, like where the relationship has to be thought out and, you know, you're not buying insurance together and shit like that, right? You're thinking about your career.
Yeah, thinking about my career. And I mean, and just comedy and keeping moving forward, because I know I've yielded the most results, like financially or mentally satisfying things have come from comedy, to where I just want to keep doing that, especially like, because I, you know, I wouldn't even consider bringing somebody into this unpredictable situation.
Yeah, no,
like,
oh, it's hard.
I don't know where, you know.
And you're out at night every night, right?
Out at night, and yeah. And
yeah. Is your girlfriend a comedian?
I like to sleep in. No, she's not. She is a performer. She's a musician. So it's like close.
That's
it's
good.
Close,
that
but
like
it's
a good
not it's not too far, you know.
Perfect.
She gets it. She knows what I have to do to kind of hustle it, and the last person I dated was a comedian in the comedy world, and I felt like I had less, there was even less understanding for what I had to do because of the things that she wanted, and she knew too much, and she also, you know, eventually wanted kids and things like that, which I was like, you know, well, do you eventually want kids? And I'm like, I can't answer that right now. And so that was this perpetual sort of argument of like, are you, you know, I need you to tell me things that you don't know, but I don't know them, but I need you to tell me. And that's,
well,
sort of,
I would have counseled her that, like, that if you aren't in a position to tell her, that's a perfectly reasonable answer, that she could have that there's a lot of information in there that she didn't want to know, maybe, or wasn't able to process without having it told her directly. I'm a little, that makes me, you know, just as the shrink, I'm a little angry at her. It makes me a little angry.
You know.
At women, not people, at people. You know, people tell us things. Listen to our other humans. So, your life today, we've got like 5-8 minutes left. So where are you now? Like, what is the thing that's the most, can you articulate? Are you willing to articulate? Can you be generous and help us help articulate? What's like the biggest mental, emotional ball you're wrestling with right now?
That's a really
in
good
8
question.
Minutes or less.
Oh,
sorry. No, I mean, I'm like, yeah, here's a really big question now. I mean, you know.
There's a couple things. One which I have to recognize that I'm not as in control of, so to think about it and toil with it is you know, maybe futile in a way. But the other one is like sort of an estrangement from a friendship that I had, and being, you know, in the same city as my friend, and but also not being close with them like I used to be, and having other politics come into it that make it sort of like difficult to move forward, and there's, you know, it
was
makes
it a
me
comedian?
Realize no just a friend, just
friend.
A buddy, but like a buddy that I've had for a long time, but then we've sort of fell out of favor for whatever reason, and it's definitely a thing of like, you know, somebody that you thought would always be there or assumed is always has your back, but then coming to a realization where everybody changes, and you know, even you can't always expect how things used to be to how they are. Like, that's, it's sort of an unrealistic thing, even though it's a romantic notion of like, I will always be there for you if you ever need me. But then it's like, oh, well, actually, no, not now. And like, there's,
did you guys have a fight or a particular thing? Or there's a lot of, I'm getting the sense there's a lot of unspoken stuff there,
right? Oh, yeah, a lot. There's so much unspoken. And I think that's the problem. It's the realization that I can't, you can't be, sometimes it's easier to be open with a stranger, as in the case of a therapy or whatever like that, than it is with people that you're really close to. And even people that would tell you that they love you or that, you know, would make you feel like you could tell them anything, when you do share with them some things of either how you're thinking or how you're feeling, if they're not emotionally ready to accept that, they'll distance themselves from
you. So, what I'm hearing, perhaps, is that you feel like this guy distanced. Is it a guy?
It's a guy.
It's a guy distanced himself from you, and you have ideas about what might have happened, but you don't know.
Yeah, I have speculations.
Is that right?
But because of the distance and lack of communication with us, it's remained at that speculative area, which is dangerous because of all the, you know, you don't really know until you know. But all I know is the sort of last conversation that we had. And so everything, all of my assumptions are built off of that last communication and conversation. I've since tried to reach out and just a sort of, easygoing, non-dramatic, non-issue way of like, hey, what's going on? Let's hang out I'm doing this for 4th of July or what's going on or blah, blah, blah. But noticed that I didn't really receive the same type of treatment or response that I'd be like, yeah, bro, well, even if we can't, let's hang out. Like, none of that happened. It was just sort of like a dismissive response. And
so
I'm like, oh, okay.
I
did get a response, but it was very, arm's length and not typical of what our history would
say. So have you thought
of
doing something more direct? Like, I don't know if this sounds crazy, but like, I miss you. I wonder, I'm just curious to know what happened. I mean, it's okay. I want to talk about it. I mean, have you thought about anything like that, or what's getting in the way? A fear of being homos? I just had to throw that in there.
That's funny. Well, I have thought about that, but I also have thought about taking this time to just evaluate, like, okay, well, I could say those things and they may or may not be received as I desire them, which is okay. But, you know, I'm just trying to take stock in like, what do I really want something from this relationship? Or is it one of those things of like trying to make something work that maybe isn't there to work anymore or something like that? Like, maybe we've evolved and also that sort of bitter position of like, of feeling betrayed and being like, no, fuck you. You have to, you know, also having those things of like, no, you reach out, you lay your sword down, you know? And
okay. So
and
we
some
have
feeling a
we
little
have
bit
two
of those
minutes
things.
Left. So can I just tell you
tell me
what I think? This is what
yes,
I think.
Please,
I'd
yes,
be
please.
Writing you a prescription.
Okay.
For what it's worth, in my humble opinion. I think that, it would be really worth it for you to reach out to the guy and try to find out in a direct way, because for one thing, I think it's really healing. And I also think that will be a growth experience for you. I think I understand why it's really hard to do that. But I think there's a certain, you know, like we all would be, there's a certain fear of rejection. It's natural. I mean, that's what we'd be afraid of. But, I think that you doing that will make you into a bigger person and will be very empowering for you. And then I think you can just like, fuck him, move on. I don't know. That's what I would, tell you to do if I'm telling you what to do.
Okay. Okay.
Does that make any sense
to
you?
It does make sense. And I,
cause it doesn't matter. You're right. See, you're speculating about it and you could be right. Like, fuck him. Who knows what the fuck happened, but that doesn't matter. You know, the point is I care about you cause you're my patient. So what I'm saying is, if you take the action, then you can just put it aside and know that you are capable of like doing that. And it's not that easy to do. So, you know, it's a good opportunity. And then you can say, fuck him. Fuck him. Speaking of fuck him, it's time to go.
Fuck that.
Well, I think we you know, I feel good, Ben. I feel like I feel like I got to see behind the curtain of Ben Kronberg.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot there as well I thought. And I just want to say thanks again to all my friends at Radio Free Brooklyn. I love you guys. This radio show is so fabulous. I'm enjoying it so much, and I know you are too. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. And I'll be thinking about all of you when I'm on vacation. I'm staying in a house that a B&B that two gay guys are renting out. I think it looks great because there's no... Dr. Lisa gives a shit.